Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 530, titled Alpha Males, One Hell of a Conspiracy Theory. This is being recorded on October 16th of the year 2005. Before we get into the main body of the broadcast, I want to alert listeners to the fact that three very important books, two of them long out of print, are now available for download for free on the Spitfire website. For some time, we've had the landmark text Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, available. In addition to that, two more books, one, The Nazis Go Underground from 1944 by Kurt Rees, and the other, All Honorable Men from 1950 by James Stewart Martin, are available. In this program, I'm going to be taking a look at some tendrils of a global network that appears to have been not only trafficking around Mohammed Atta, but that also goes in the direction of, among other places, Liechtenstein, and through Liechtenstein in a couple of different ways to the bank Al-Taqwa. What we're looking at here, in my opinion, is a Bormann slash underground Reich network. In a number of the programs that were numbered 390, I dealt with former national security consultant Philip Bobbitt's concept of the virtual state. That is a state, a political state, that does not have formal geographical boundaries. The underground Reich is such an entity, and so as we evaluate this global network, it is really what Philip Bobbitt, in his book Shield of Achilles, posited as a virtual state, a state but without formal geographical boundaries. Al-Qaeda, in my opinion, would fall into a similar category, and one that is intersected with and heavily overlaps the virtual state that we're looking at here. We're going to begin by taking a look at the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft and its extension, and it was this organization, a private organization, but one that has strong connections to both the U.S. and German governments, that was trafficking around Mohammed Atta in Germany and possibly the United States. After we review some of Daniel Hopsicker's information from his landmark text, Welcome to Terrorland, as well as from some of the articles he has on his Mad Cow Morning News website, we're going to take a look at some of the evidentiary tributaries running out from the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft and some of the other fellowships that are offered under the auspices of the CDG or CDS, Karl Duisberg Society, as it's called in America. We're going to begin by taking a look at an article that Daniel wrote on April 24th of 2003. By the way, this information is also contained in For the Record 477 and is detailed in Daniel Hopsicker's book, again, Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida. Again, this is called Mohammed Atta Worked for Elite U.S.-German Government Exchange Program, April 24th, 2003, by Daniel Hopsicker. It reads in part, "For at least 4 years while living in Hamburg during the 1990s, terrorist ringleader Mohammed Atta was part of a joint venture between the U.S. and German governments, the Mad Cow Morning News has learned, an elite international exchange program run by a little-known private organization with close ties to powerful American political figures like David Rockefeller and former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. The jointly funded government effort picked up the tab for Atta on sojourns in Cairo, Istanbul, and Aleppo in Syria during the years 1994 and 1995, as well as employing him as a tutor and seminar participant during 1996 and 1997. Moreover, Atta's financial relationship with the U.S.-German government effort may even extend back to his initial move from Egypt to Germany in 1992, after being, quote, recruited, unquote, in Cairo by a mysterious German couple dubbed the hijackers' sponsors, unquote, in a recent news account in the Chicago Tribune. Mohammed Atta, before becoming a terrorist ringleader, unquote, enjoyed the patronage of a government initiative known as the Congress Bundestag program, overseen by the U.S. State Department and the German Ministry of Economic Cooperation and Development, the German equivalent of the U.S. Agency for International Development, busy currently supervising the secretive bidding race for tens of billions of dollars of post-war reconstruction contracts in Iraq. News that Mohammed Atta had been on the payroll of the elite international program surfaced in a curious way just a month after the 9/11 attack. A brief, seven-line report by German newspaper Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung on October 18, 2001, under the headline, "Atta was tutor for scholarship holders," unquote. And again, it's these scholarships, not only the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft and its American branch, the Carl Duisberg Society, but also the Robert Bosch Fellowship and the Alpha Fellowship that we're going to be looking at here. And we're going to be taking a look at some of the tendrils that come out from these, continuing with Daniel's article. The story quoted spokesman for Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, described as a German international further education organization, unquote, as having admitted paying Hamburg Cadre Principal Atta as a scholarship holder and tutor between 1995 and 1997. But what makes the story curious is that the German paper concealed the shocking implications of their story that Mohammed Atta had been on the payroll of a joint U.S.-German government program through the simple expedient of neglecting to mention that the, quote, Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, unquote, was merely a private entity set up to administer the, quote, exchange, unquote, initiative of the two governments. The U.S. end of the program is run out of an address at United Nations Plaza in New York by CDS International. The letters stand for Carl Duisberg Society, also the name of its German counterpart in Cologne, the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft. Both are named for Carl Duisberg, a German chemist and industrialist who headed the Bayer Corporation during the 1920s. By the way, later on, we're going to talk about Carl Duisberg, a very interesting fellow indeed. Skipping down. Henry Kissinger, to cite just one example, had at one time addressed over 100 international business leaders at an anniversary dinner organized and celebrating CDS International held at the River Club of New York, June 2, 1987. Kissinger congratulated CDS International on its 20 years of service in keeping close business ties, not only between Germany and the United States, but more recently through career development programs for participants from other countries as well. 5 years later, Mohammed Atta became one of these participants from, quote, other, unquote, countries. Skipping down. CDS International states the organization's literature. CDS International states the organization's literature provides opportunities for young German engineers. Mohammed Atta wasn't, strictly speaking, a young German engineer, unquote, but apparently Kissinger's praise for career development programs for participation for participants from other countries as well, unquote, had been taken to heart by the friendly folks at the Carl Duisberg Society. Again, quoting, these young German engineers earn real-world experience and are given assignments to contribute from the start, unquote, a program spokesman enthused in a newspaper interview. The organization is today understandably shy about mentioning that their most famous recent graduates' quote, real-world experience, unquote, included murdering about almost 3,000 people in New York City in slightly less than 2 hours. A financial relationship between the terrorist ringleader and the U.S. and German governments has not previously even been hinted at in America's major media. The conspiracy-minded might conclude that the fact that the scoop is going to the Mad Cow Morning News may owe something to the program's raft of politically powerful boosters. Having big juice in high places may also explain more equally curious omissions in a second story about Mohammed Atta's time in Germany, which appeared recently in the March 7, 2003 Chicago Tribune under the headline, quote, 9/11 haunts hijacker sponsors. German couple talks of living with pilot Atta, unquote. The article describes a 1992 meeting in Cairo between Atta and a German couple running an international student exchange program, unquote, a meeting which the Tribune says led Atta to move to Hamburg. During a visit to the Egyptian capital in the fall of 1991, the Tribune reported, the German couple had stayed with friends who knew Atta's father, a Cairo lawyer, and his father's friends had then introduced the German couple to Atta. Now, parenthetically, I would add at this point that we now know, courtesy of Daniel Hopsicker's later research and some material that we accessed and among other programs for the Record 523, that Mohammed Atta's father was apparently supervising the hijackers' activities in the Venice, Florida area, and this, too, has been covered up. So the German couple had known Mohammed Atta's father, a reputed member of the Islamo-Fascist Muslim Brotherhood, and the fellow who, according to a surveillance tape, a videotape from a pharmacy, was actually overseeing the hijackers' activities in Venice, Florida for a period of time. So note that. Continuing. Atta, who had recently graduated with a degree in architectural engineering from the University of Cairo, told the couple he wanted to study architecture in Germany, but he had no particular idea where he should go, unquote, the paper reported. Though the article neglects to mention it, the reason Atta found himself with, quote, no particular idea where he should go, unquote, was because although he had studied engineering at prestigious Cairo University, he had not fared well enough to gain admission to its graduate school. The paper quotes the German wife telling investigators, quote, "In this first conversation, we suggest that he continue his studies in Hamburg and offered him a place to live at our house," unquote. Atta, she states, accepted their offer right away. This magnanimous gesture by the German couple to an undistinguished young man they have just met raises serious questions. Perhaps their gesture is just the very milk of human kindness. Perhaps it is something else. Why did this German couple running an international exchange program leap at the opportunity to help a young man not considered promising enough to gain entrance to graduate school in Cairo and offer him a place to live at their house? The Tribune doesn't say. And they have made it difficult for anyone else to follow up on their story because they neglected to identify either the couple or the, quote, international, unquote, program they ran by name. But although Tribune correspondent Stevenson Swanson cites the German couple for, quote, having played such an important role in Atta's move to Germany, unquote, he never gives either their names nor that of the organization they worked for. This is some curious, if you know what we mean. After all, the story is 1,200 words in length. So it's not as if they didn't have room to print the names, is it? Quote, Jane and John Doe from Help a Student International, unquote, would have been enough. You know, who, what, when, where, and why, the tenets of journalism. Either the Tribune just forgot the who, or something even weirder happened. After studying German in Cairo, Atta arrived in Germany on July 24, 1992, according to the investigators' records, and then lived rent-free for at least the next 6 months in the couple's home in a quiet middle-class suburb neighborhood. And since just 2 years later, Atta was on the payroll of the Congress Bundestag program, it is reasonable to conclude, and no thanks to the Chicago Tribune, that it was also the, quote, exchange program responsible for bringing him to Germany in the first place. CDS International's elite sponsors are apparently influential enough to have kept their organization's name out of the newspapers, or at any rate, out of the Chicago Tribune. What we're going to do next is to review some information that I presented in Side 2 of For the Record Program number 523, an interview with Daniel Hopsicker. And what we're going to take a look at are some of the individuals and institutions that overlap the Carl Duisberg Society and the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft. Here then is from Side 2 of For the Record Program number 523, this to be taken in the context of the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft. Also, one of the things you've pointed out in a number of occasions is that Tony Blair, shortly after September 11th, discussed Al-Qaeda as being part of a global network.
Yeah, a global network supporting Al-Qaeda while they were in this country.
Well, there is a very, very interesting thing. What I'm going to do is follow out some of the evidentiary tributaries coming out from the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, the American branch, certainly the German branch and possibly the American extension, the CDS, part of the Congress Bundestag program, handling Mohammed Atta in the United States from their website. By the way, first of all, we should talk a little bit. Carl Duisberg himself is a very interesting fellow. He was the general director of Bayer AG. That is the famous pharmaceutical company that developed aspirin. It became part of the key IG Farben chemical company in Germany in lead up to and during World War II, the backbone, basically, not only of German war production, but also of political support for Adolf Hitler. Bayer Company has an interesting history. Bayer developed, in addition to aspirin, heroin, which was originally developed as a cure for morphine addiction and as a cough suppressant, particularly effective for children, which I don't doubt. You know, if little Tyler came up with a cough, give him a little heroin, and he'd be mellow yellow after that, no doubt. Then, in the run-up to World War II, Bayer was asked by Adolf Hitler to develop a synthetic morphine because they were afraid that they would not be able to get enough raw opium due to naval blockades by the Allies to develop morphine to treat casualties. So Bayer developed a synthetic morphine, which they called Dolophine, D-O-L-O-P-H-I-N-E, in honor of Adolf Hitler. After the war, Dolophine continued to be marketed by Bayer and other members of the pharmaceutical cartel, but because of the controversy after the war, they renamed it Methadone, and now that's used to treat heroin addiction. Carl Duisberg also was the developer of the forced labor program in World War I, in which Belgian and other nationals were forced. They were relocated into Germany and basically turned into, in effect, slaves. Perhaps most interestingly, Carl Duisberg was the inventor of poison gas in World War I. He called that a higher form of killing when the stalemate on the Western Front due to trench warfare was becoming an increasingly just a raw bleeding wound. Duisberg came up with the idea of taking the phosgene gas, poison gas that was a byproduct of some of I.G. Farben's, basically of Bayer's chemical processes, and loading it into artillery shells and firing a barrage. And he was, Carl Duisberg, was the godfather of poison gas, basically the first weapon of mass destruction. What I wanted to do here, Daniel, is to read a little bit about the history of the Carl Duisberg Society, which then, that's the American branch of the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft. It says, our history, and this, by the way, will resonate very strongly with members of the listening audience. In the 1920s, Carl Duisberg, general director of Bayer AG in Germany, envisioned sending German students to the United States on work-study programs. Duisberg was convinced that international practical training was critical to the growth of German industry. Many of the returning trainees later rose to prominent positions at AEG, that's German General Electric, Bayer, Bosch, Daimler-Benz, and Siemens, bringing with them new methods for mass production, new ideas, and new business practices. Following World War II, alumni from the first exchanges founded the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, or CDG, in 1949 to help engineers, businessmen, and farmers gain international work experience necessary for the rebuilding of Germany. And then goes on to describe the expansion in 1968 of this to become the Carl Duisberg Society and so forth. It's now part of a global network, and among the principal corporate sponsors, the Bayer Corporation, Lufthansa, German Airlines, AESU. By the way, interestingly enough, too, Bayer has an interesting connection with the events in and around 9/11. In the summer of 2001, Bayer was looking to sell its pharmaceuticals division. This was in the context of some of the go-go globalized corporate maneuvering that was taking place at that time. But unfortunately, in the summer of 2001, Bayer's pharmaceutical division stock was heavily depressed because they had been marketing a blood pressure medicine, which apparently had proved fatal to a number of the people who had taken it. And so their stock was way, way down when they wanted to basically divest of the pharmaceuticals division. But there was a fortuitous thing that happened shortly after that because of the anthrax attacks. Cipro, which is manufactured by Bayer's pharmaceutical division, suddenly became in tremendous demand, and because of that, there was a huge rise in the stock of Bayer Pharmaceuticals, which then facilitated attempts to divest of the pharmaceutical division. That also fits in with some of the short-selling and apparent profit-taking that took place, speculating on airline and insurance stocks, among other things, something fairly well documented by September 11th researchers. But looking into, here are the directors of the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft that was trafficking around Mohammed Atta. Again, from the board of directors of the Carl Duisberg Society, their website, Gerd D. Müller, retired, note a member of the Bundestag on the CSU ticket, chairman of the board of Bayer Corporation. Dr. Hans W. Decker, treasurer of the board, a professor of Columbia University. Robert Fenstermacher, executive director, CDS International. Carl Gierken, G-E-R-C-K-E-N, a partner in Alston and Bird, LLP. I'm not familiar with that. Dr. Olaf J. Groth, G-R-O-T-H, Executive Director, Strategic Analysis and Integration for Boeing International Corporation. Dr. H. Friedrich Holtzapfel, the Managing Director of the Burlington Group. Dr. Gudrun Kockendörfer-Lucius, Managing Director of IWENT, Capacity Building, International Germany. Fritz E. Kropracek, Managing Director of Deutsche Bank AG. Deutsche Bank appears to have been a vehicle for much of the profit-taking in connection with September 11th. More here. Wolfgang Linz, retired Executive Director of CDS International. Dr. Carl M. Mayer-Wittmann, President of WEFA Incorporated. Francis McCaffrey, first American name we've seen here, Manager Center Development BMW of North America. Dr. Horst K. Salbach, Vice Chairman of the Board, Festo Corporation, and Dr. Norbert Schneider, chief executive officer of the Karl Duisberg Centrum GmbH. So whether or not that has anything to do with the allegations of Amanda Keller about the propitious lineage of some of Mohammed Atta's German associates remains to be seen. But now, here's where we start getting into the global network. Now, on the Karl Duisberg Society website, there is another related program called Alpha Fellowship Program. And this relates to the Alpha, the Crown Alpha Group in Russia. Alpha is a major Russian oil company with, again, more connections than a switchboard. And they have, and under the auspices of the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, or Karl Duisberg Society, they have an Alpha Fellowship Program for Russians to come to the United States. And this is associated with the Alpha Company. Now, that is an interesting company, too. What we're going to look at here is a report from the Public Eye from August 2nd of 2000, Dateline, Washington. Listen to where this Alpha company, again, which has a fellowship sponsored under the auspices, apparently, of CDS, who is trafficking around Mohammed Atta. Reading now from the Public Eye of August 2nd, 2000. Under the guidance of Richard Cheney, a get-the-government-out-of-my-face conservative Halberton company over the past 5 years has emerged as a corporate welfare hog, benefiting from at least $3.8 billion in federal contracts and taxpayer-insured loans. Check this out, Daniel. One of these loans was approved in April by the U.S. Export-Import Bank. It guaranteed $489 million in credits to a Russian oil company whose roots are embedded in a legacy of KGB and Communist Party corruption, as well as drug trafficking and organized crime funds, according to Russian and U.S. sources and documents. Those claims are hotly disputed by the Russian oil firm's holding company. Halberton, which lobbied for the Ex-Im loan after the State Department initially asserted that the deal would run counter to the, quote, national interest, unquote, will receive $292 million of those funds to refurbish a massive Siberian oil field owned by the Russian company, the Tyumen Oil Company, which is controlled by a conglomerate called the Alpha Group, okay, which has a fellowship program under the auspices of CDS. Skipping down here. This gets very, very interesting indeed. First of all, about the Alpha Group here, and I'm editing just a bit here as we go, about some documentation about Alpha. That document and the FSB, that's the Russian Intelligence Service, the successor to the KGB, that document and the FSB report claimed that Alpha Bank, one of Russia's largest and most profitable, as well as Alpha Eco, a trading company, again, this is associated with the Alpha conglomerate, had been deeply involved in the early 1990s in laundering of Russian and Colombian drug money and in trafficking drugs from the Far East to Europe. The former KGB major, who with the fall of communism in the late 1980s had himself been involved in the plan by the KGB and Communist Party to loot state enterprises, said that Alpha Bank was founded with party and KGB funds and quickly attracted rogue agents who had served in anti-organized crime units. Quote, they, the rogue agents on the bank's payroll, quickly determined that dealing in drugs would bring the highest profits with literally no risk in Russia, according to the former KGB officer. He claimed that a, quote, large channel of heroin transit was established from Burma through Laos, Vietnam, to the Far East, Siberia, unquote. From there, the drugs were camouflaged as flour and sugar shipments and forwarded on to Germany. The drug operation was controlled by a Chechen mob family, he said. Of course, Chechnya is now a focal point of a lot of Islamic fundamentalist guerrilla activity. More about this network, and again, this overlaps the Karl Duisberg Society. The FSB document claims that by the end of 1993, a top Alpha official met with Gilberto Rodriguez Orihuela, O-R-E-J-U-E-L-A, the now-imprisoned financial mastermind of Colombia's notorious Cali cartel, quote, to conclude an agreement about the transfer of money into Alpha Bank from offshore zones such as the Bahamas, Gibraltar, and others. The plan was to insert it back into the Russian economy through the purchase of stock in Russian companies, unquote. The account from the former KGB officer is unclear about Alpha's alleged role with Rodriguez, but apparently confirms that, quote, in 1993 and 4, there were attempts of the so-called chess player, Rodriguez's nickname, to launder and legalize large amounts of criminal money in Russia. He reported that there was evidence, quote, regarding Alpha Bank's involvement with the money laundering of Latin American drug cartels. Now, this is the group for which Cheney's Halberton Oil was getting an export-import bank loan. Still more about Tyumen Oil, that is a subsidiary of Alpha. Tyumen could have significant access to the White House should the Bush-Cheney ticket win in the November presidential elections. Tyumen's lead attorney at Akin Gump is James C. Langdon, Jr., a managing partner at the firm. He is also one of George W. Bush's pioneers, one of the elite fundraisers who have brought in at least $100,000 for the Republican presidential hopeful. So how do you like those apples there, Daniel? A lot of interesting connections. This is the same network we're talking about, this global network. Still more. From Forbes magazine, I realize I'm going quickly, but we got time limitations. From Forbes magazine of November 15th of 04, basically the Crown Alpha Group, this same entity, was involved with the funky oil for food deals that are now the focal point of UN investigations and others. Again, by Michael Maiello from Forbes magazine, about the Rondo, as they call it. One, Alpha buys 1 million barrels of cheap Iraqi oil in Ceyhan, Turkey at $25 a barrel. Step two, Alpha sells the oil to its subsidiary Crown Trade and Finance for $25.59. Step three, Crown, that's part of Alpha, sells the oil to ExxonMobil for $27.78 at an 11% profit. The hard-to-trace proceeds now reside in Gibraltar, a secretive tax haven. And still more about some of the tributaries coming out of this network, skipping down in the Forbes article. One of the companies involved with this Alpha Crown Rondo, as they say, and again, this company got a whole bunch of, got millions of dollars secured courtesy of the pressure of Dick Cheney's Halliburton Oil. That is a company, a Houston-based company called Bay Oil. A favorite Rondo cost customer and at a point of entry to the U.S. market was a Houston company, Bay Oil. And skipping down, during the 1980s Iran-Iraq War, Bay Oil apparently got a fee of $2 a barrel for brokering 20 million barrels of Iraqi oil to the Chilean arms dealer Carlos Cardoen, as recounted in Forbes of January 30th, 1995. Now, Carlos Cardoen is a name that will ring very familiar to those students of 1980s covert operations. He was one of the principals in the Iraqgate scandal, overseen, like Iran-Contra, by the elder George Bush, securing American arms for Saddam Hussein, just as we were selling arms to the Iranians during that war. And we're going to continue with our examination of this global network and some of the implications of that inside, too. When I talk about the underground Reich, that may seem fantastic to people, and some of the many arguments that I present may sound fantastic to people. Please access the Spitfire website and the many linked websites or URLs to the Spitfire website. Spitfire, www.spitfireliz.com. At the top of each of the more recent descriptions, there are links to a number of different websites that have a wealth of information, including now three landmark texts available for download for free, in addition to Paul Manning's Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, now available in a much easier file to download. We also have The Nazis Go Underground by Kurt Reese from 1944, and All Honorable Men by James Stuart Martin from 1950. And those books, in combination with the Martin Bormann Nazi in Exile text, will help to flesh out your understanding of some of the things that I'm talking about. Also, sister station WFMU is archiving the entire For the Record series on Real Audio and MP3. www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery has more recent programs streaming. There's another website with the balance of the broadcast available for download only. Another website, WFMU, is podcasting the For the Record shows. There are also links to other websites, one of which is a blog spot from the For the Record programs and the RFAs. A search function is available, a website that has the declassified government documents talking about the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and after World War II, and all kinds of other information as well, lectures, and also a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. We'll continue with this fascinating discussion on Side 2 of For the Record 530, but this concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 530, Alpha Males, one hell of a conspiracy theory, being recorded on October 16th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.